Okay, so I've been talking with Yoshua about this now for like 2 weeks. So, Eric?
Oh, good.
Because he wrote up a version of this for the director. So let's talk about it. So, Yosef, in the latter half of the parasha, as the famine intensifies, begins the selling off of the stored grain to the Egyptians, and increasingly he centralizes the power to Paro. They offer him his the animals, so he sells it, so he buys the animals, and then eventually they have nothing left, their bodies and their land, and it's not clear what actually happens at that point. He clearly gives the land to they give the land to Yosef, or really to the throne, right, to Paro, in return for food. And it's not clear whether they offered themselves as slaves, whether Yosef takes it. The Ramban denies this. The Ramban says he didn't take them as slaves because they offered their bodies and the land, and he only took the land. Other Mefarshim say, what are you talking about? That's the point. He took away their land, shuffled them around the entire country, and now they work as tenant farmers. That is what slavery looks like. And the Mefarshim really divide on whether this is a good thing, a bad thing. How are we supposed to view this moment? So that many of the Midrashim go in the direction, yeah, this is great. It's amazing. What we learn from here is that, we learn from here that Yosef is trying to make his brothers comfortable. What a better way to make his brothers comfortable than taking all the people who are citizens and making them feel uncomfortable by taking away their land and throwing them into random cities, and taking the people who are immigrants and giving them a place to live. That's a really wonderful way of to make his brothers comfortable, and that is one tradition in which Yosef is looked at as positive. This is, you probably know this because Rashi quotes this direction, comes from the Gemara in Chulin. It appears in several midrashim. Other mefarshim say it's even. Well, this is like the biggest we've parshed in a long time or ever. Other mefarshim say again, the positives are really surprising. So one is this, which you might have heard because you know Rashi, but Rishul ben Chafni, he's a Gaon, says, "Oh, you know why this is positive? Because Yosef took away their animals." You think that's negative? You're wrong. It's a time of famine. Owning animals is a liability, not a benefit, because they're starving themselves. So if they have animals, not only are they going to have to feed themselves, they're going to have to feed their animals. So Yosef agreed to buy their animals, even though that's counterproductive during famine. So Yosef is actually helping them. He's taking a worthless, or even less than worthless, a counterproductive commodity, right, into his responsibility, and giving them food in return, which is crazy, right? You don't do that during a famine. You say, I don't want more people or more beings to take care of. Shadal, Rav Hirsch, Netziv, they say, well, yeah, he moved people, but it doesn't sound like he moved people as individuals. He moved communities. So he allowed them to keep community. And again, I already mentioned that the Ramban had said that he didn't even take them as slaves. He turned that offer down. He took their land, but he left them as free people.
He says that he didn't make them slaves at all.
Correct. The Pasuk doesn't say that. Correct. Because the Pasuk doesn't say that he made them slaves. They offered slavery, but it never says explicitly that Yosef accepted that offer, and therefore the Ramban says he never did. Other Mefarshim say that what's striking here, and this is Rav Ben Rambam, and we're looking at Al-Hatzorah now just to get through it very quickly, but this is in Philo, Rav Ben Rambam, Radak, Ramban, Ibn Kaspi, Ralbag, and Nitziv. They all say, look, Vayave Yosef et Kesef Bitav Faro, right here, he's second in command. No one's questioning him. He has their lives in his hands. He can do whatever he wants. He could easily embezzle just a little bit of that money. It's so easy. And he doesn't. He brings everything. He's working for Paro, and therefore he brings all the money to Paro. And this is great. So that's really the there are other nuances in this. That this is positive, but there are. And this is what I've been talking with Yeshua about. There are many who think that this is not as positive as this, as the way I just said it. Most of these Mefarshim assume that Yosef did, in fact, enslave the Egyptians, even though, again, it's not explicit, but it really does sound that that's, even if he doesn't say it, it does sound like that happened. But how negative is it, and what is the problem? And this is where, we talked about this a little bit last year, but let's divide it, because there are actually nuances that we didn't talk about last year. So, there are some people who say, look, this is the problem. Yosef enslaves the residents of the land, but he doesn't enslave the priests or his family, which puts the immigrants, his family, at an advantage over the residents. And there's a phrase for that in Aramaic. There's a phrase for it in Aramaic which is even more harsh than that, right? Which is Yitziva be'ara v'giyora b'shmei shmaya. Right, which is the so Rashi has two interpretations of that phrase. It's a phrase that the Gemara uses when things are topsy turvy. It could mean you're standing on the ground and your arrow, which is one interpretation of the word giura, is in heaven. That's probably not pshat. It's the other pshat that Rashi brings, which is no yitziva be'ara. The citizen is on the ground v'giyora b'shmei shmaya, and the immigrant is in heaven. That's not how the world is supposed to work. That's not politically correct. But that's what Rashi says, and right, this is... But that's what the phrase means, right? The world is topsy-turvy. So many people look at this, especially modern commentaries, and say, oh, this is why the Jews end up being slaves. Because you bred animosity, right? You bred animosity. And this is how slavery happened. Now, there are variations on this. So... One version of this is, look, this is true, but it's not Yosef's fault. Yosef is doing his job, right? He worked for Paro. This explains politically why this happened and how it happened, but Yosef is not at fault. There's a moral problem here. It's just that this is descriptively what led to the Jews being enslaved.
Explanation kind of contradicts
the text. 1 second. So this is really the way Bechor Shor takes it, right? The Bechor Shor takes this as, yeah, look, the Egyptians, eventually, they look at the fact that the Jews are excluded from taxes, and, you know, the way you see in America now, that there's all this animosity towards the billionaires, right? And there's an attempt, right? And there's a movement amongst people who feel like they've been disadvantaged by the same culture that has helped the billionaires to, right, support people who are going to, whatever, have a rich tax, right? 2% on all, whatever, right? But, again, I'm not weighing in on support or not support. You probably know which side of that equation I'm on. That's not the point. That's really not the point. But it's the same dynamic, right? Meaning, it's not his fault. It just is what it is. Other people say, no, he really did make a mistake, but it wasn't an ethical failing. It was an error in judgment. So Moshe Pava, in a fascinating article, says, what you learn from this is the problem of insider trading, right? And he notes that philosophers of economics, people like Milton Friedman, believe that in order to have political freedom, you need economic freedom, right? Once people start losing their economic freedom, Once people start losing their economic freedom, then it's very hard to maintain political freedom because they are now dependent. Hence, their obsession with capitalism. And Moshe Pava was the dean, I think it was dean, of Cy Sims, the business school at YU. So he wrote an article on how Yosef is guilty of insider trading, practically is involved in insider trading, meaning that he didn't allow capitalism. Right? I mean, what did he do? The way he reads the story, it's very interesting, is that Yosef didn't tell everybody that there was going to be a famine. Only Paro knew it, which means that he was collecting grain without telling anybody, so he had insider information, which is a system failure in capitalism, because he used information that he knew that the prices would go up, and that's what led to this, right? He could have told them to store it. He could have told them what was going on, and then the market forces would have had people save, and the prices would have been normal. But because he used insider trading, only he saved, drove the price up, and made people to give up their freedom, the economics ended up being controlled by the government, which turned this into socialism, and poof, right? This is just Yosef not understanding exactly how economics works, and Mimela, they lost their freedom. Right? He said, what's the problem? It's not that Yosef is, it's not Yosef's fault in a moral sense, but once he did this, he ended up accidentally setting up a totalitarian socialist state, which now gave power of the power to later enslave the Jews, because he created a situation in which people didn't have economic freedom, which is a short step from there to lack of political freedom. And once you have that society, who knows who the next person is going to be taken advantage of. Right? This is his economic perspective. Other people are much harsher. And even ones who don't say he was directly morally responsible will say, look, and this is, you find this in like Leon Cass and Chief Rabbi Sachs, former Chief Rabbi Sachs. I can't say he's Chief Rabbi. I know the current Chief Rabbi. Former Chief Rabbi, I know him very well, right? It's like, literally every time someone has said, oh, your sister-in-law is engaged to the son of the Chief Rabbi, they're like, oh, Rabbi Sachs. I'm like, no, Rabbi Mervis, right? Sachs is not the Chief Rabbi anymore. He's retired. So this was his Dvar Torah last week. Rabbi Sachs, not Rabbi Mervis. But there were several modern scholars, Aaron Wodlowski and Leon Cass, were really harsh. And they say, look, it's not just a mistake. It's a moral failing. What was the moral failing? So they have different variations. One is, look, the Egyptian pharaohs thought they were God. And here's Yosef literally giving the crown the ability to decide life and death. He's centralizing all economic power, all power over food. They literally come and say, our lives are in your hands. What do you do? And he says, give me all your land, and now you're going to work for Pharaoh, and he's going to give you food, and he's going to decide whether you live and die. Meaning, the problems that happen in Mitzrayim later on are because he creates an environment, not just totalitarian, this totalitarian society which quickly leads to Paro thinking he's God and can do whatever he wants and enslave an entire people, and all that happens because Yosef just lets this happen. He works for Paro and enables this. And therefore they slip in from saying this is just a mistaken judgment, right? Which is like what Moshe Pava says, it's a managerial mistake, not an ethical mistake, to saying, no, Yosef really missed the boat here and sinned. Right? He enabled a system which didn't respect freedom, which allowed a totalitarian tyranny to arise, in which the king thought he was God and could do whatever he wanted, and Mimela, later on, he turned against the Jews, and he had the power to do it because Yosef had created the environment in which this had happened. So there's all these variations of saying that Yosef really is at fault, either because he made a mistaken judgment, or more than a mistaken judgment. Now you could take it even farther, right? Meaning you could accept the Midrash's claim that he did this to protect his family, and then you're going to get an even more biting moral critique, which is, he didn't just enable Paro, this was the point. He wanted to take freedom away from the Egyptians, right, in favor of his family. Now that, if you don't accept the claim that that's a good thing, then you have an even more biting moral critique, which is, he actually was directly responsible for the choice to enslave people. And that's why his family ends up being enslaved. And we talked about later, that's basically the way Rabbi Clapper takes this. Right? That the reason Yosef, by the end, tells his brothers, oh God, we're going to be here for a long time, take me out when you leave, is because he realizes that he made a mistake and he set in motion forces that are going to keep them there and that there's nothing they can do about it. And he at some level, even recognizes his mistake. And that's already probably the more, right, the really biting moral critiques of Yosef. I'll just finish with this. On the Al HaTorah website, they suggest themselves a third possibility, which is that maybe this story, the point really is not, you're just missing the point. The reason the story isn't here is not for any of what we just said. The point is to tell you that the reason the Jews don't go back is to describe how bad the economic situation is. Because even in Egypt, where they had food, by the end of Vayigash, everyone is enslaved and selling off their animals and their land and everything. So they claim that maybe the reason the story is here is has nothing to do with Yosef and whether he's culpable or nothing like that. It's just to tell you, why did the brothers just not go back to Canaan? Because even in Mitzrayim, where there is food, people have to sell themselves into slavery, and the entire nation basically collapses into a totalitarian tyranny. Kal vachomer in Canaan, where there was no food to begin with. So this story is not here because of the dynamic of Yosef and the Egyptians, but to tell you there's a reason that the brothers end up staying is because there is nowhere safe in the world, and therefore maybe we're just looking at the story wrong. Now, it could be that more than one of these is true, that that's why the story is here, but you learn other things in the middle. All of those are possible. At the very least, it's worth thinking about, and like I told Shua, even though I taught this last year, every time you think about it, it bothers me more, and there's more to say. And because Al Azhar wrote theirs on it, I had even more sources than I had on it last year. And Roy Sachs did it, so I looked up all... If you really want biting critiques, you can look at Wodlowski and Leon Kass. They are unforgiving in their reads of how much Yosef is responsible for the totalitarian nightmare of Egypt. It's an interesting read. At the very least, it'll get you thinking. Either you'll agree with them and then you'll be quite disturbed, or you won't agree with them, but you'll at least have to figure out why you don't agree with them. But Leon Kass is such a good writer that you will at least have to respond to what he says. Okay?